But yeah, it was a lot of up and downs. I was battling with that because fullback, you know, wasn't a sexy position. I'm like, man, and ultimately, I was thinking selfish at that time. It was like, my mother, I remember that cheeseburger situation. I'm trying to get to the NFL. And fullbacks aren't really in the NFL anymore. So if I'm playing this position, how am I going to make sure my family's straight? So I battled with that the whole entire year.
Southwest Florida is one of the most beautiful places on the planet to live. For those of you that are thinking of moving from other states to come to Florida, or even just moving to a different part of the state, I want you to think of a big, beautiful luxury home. Contact Legacy Luxury Builders. They are a family-owned and operated luxury residential construction company. As a family-owned business, they believe in the power of building not just homes, but legacies. Contact Legacy Luxury Builders. The nightmare of feeling like you'll never measure up, of constant second-guessing and self-doubt. It eats away at you and destroys your confidence. I've been there too, feeling like I didn't belong on the field with my teammates. But it doesn't have to stay that way. I used to compare myself to everyone around me. I thought that no matter how hard I worked, I'd never be as good as the other guys. It killed my self-belief. I now help athletes develop an elite mindset so comparison no longer controls them. We teach techniques to cut out the negative self-talk and unlock their full potential. Imagine stepping into the box when it counts the most and feeling totally confident in your ability, feeling invincible instead of insecure, ready to seize the opportunity instead of shrinking from it. That's the mindset I help athletes develop. Don't waste another minute on comparison and self-doubt. Take control of your mindset and become the confident, unstoppable competitor you were meant to be. DM or comment below to get started with Edge and transform your mental game. What's up, everybody? We're back with another episode. I am your host, Sean French. And before we get started with this episode, I want to encourage you, if it's the first time you're listening to the show, hit the subscribe button and binge watch or listen to all the other episodes because they are equally as amazing as this one is about to be. Today, we're going to learn about a great dude who is a NCAA football national champion, a retired NFL football player. He's an entrepreneur, film producer, best-selling author, and he truly believes that no matter where you are in life, you can win. So you're about to hear a true homeless to the NFL story. I want to welcome my boy, Freddie Stevenson to the show. What's up, man?
What's up, man? Appreciate you having me. I know we've been trying to do this thing for a while, hit a few road bumps, but no, I'm glad we're finally back doing it.
I mean, we're finally back here doing it. And for the audience, give them a little context, man, we live some busy lives, right? And it's funny because like when I try to do things off the calendar, like just kind of off script, I get screwed up completely, you know? And then the last time you dealt with a car accident, which held you up. And man, I didn't feel comfortable about putting an 18-minute show out. Your story is much more than that. So I appreciate you growing through these pains with me, and we're here, baby. We are here.
Yeah, let's do it, man. Like you said, the story's too powerful, you know, to cheat the audience out of, you know, the full story. And ultimately, I love, you know, your platform. I've been following a lot of the things that you do, and you know, just you taking that pride, and you know, we're in the world where everybody just wants to put something out, but you just taking that pride and not just wanting to give the people garbage just because it's content. You know, that I appreciate that as well.
No, I appreciate it, man. You know, the internet's full with bullshit content, and I don't want to be one of those, you know, pages that just has, you know, just stuff on there. And it's funny, like I went back and I looked at her, and I want to apologize on air, man, because I looked back at my messages when you said like, hey, we might have to use that other recording. I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. I was meaning like, yeah, dude, no way. Like, I can't do that because the story's too good. But I looked at it today. I'm like, well, I kind of came off like a little bit of an asshole. So my apologies. I didn't mean.
Yeah, no, I don't take text messages. You can't. I'm not the type of person that takes that person. I was just, when I said, I was like, man, all good. We'll kind of figure this thing out. Whenever I find some free time, we'll figure it out. But yeah, I'm not a person that gets in my feelings over text messages because it's easy to read into things the wrong way.
Yeah, man. I always look at things like, you know, what if we all just had good intentions and just expected everybody else to have the same and didn't read too much into certain things, right? But no, I'm glad we're here, man, and I appreciate you. And so for the audience that doesn't know who Freddie Stevenson is, like I just want to catch them up a little bit. National NCAA football national champion at Florida State University, played football in the NFL, and has a truly amazing story. And I just want you to take the time now to kind of start from the beginning, man. You know, just your origin story, brother. Let's hit the audience with it so they can know fully what they're about to get into.
Yeah. You know, people hear the story, you know, of me making it to the collegiate level, winning the national championship, making it to the NFL. Like you said, best-selling author, film producer. But I come from humble beginnings. Early in my childhood, you know, my family's homeless, bouncing around from place to place because my father at the time is in prison for drug trafficking. It's like a huge kingpin in the area. And he's facing, they're trying to charge him with a double life sentence. Because I think this is his second time getting charged. And the judge tells him the time before that if he sees him again, he's not getting out. So then he comes back to the judge and they try to give him a double life sentence. So he's fighting for his life in there. And my mother, she's struggling, working two, sometimes three jobs just to make ends meet. And it's tough for us, just even at times, it's hard for her to pay for the baby's diapers. And we're all over the place. And the tough part about it is a lot of other people that are in our situation, in our area, they're struggling as well. So you can't always get the help that you need. And we find ourselves homeless at times, bouncing around from place to place. And it was tough, but you don't necessarily, like I said, you don't know how much you're struggling because everybody else is struggling. And I remember a day in particular where it kind of hit me how much we were struggling. We had been staying with someone at the time, and she kind of got fed up. Like, she was starting to turn off the air in the house, turn off the lights, because we're kids. You know, kids do what kids do. We're running up the light bill, turning on the lights, and turning down the air when we get hot. And she found herself at one point turning the air off to kind of try to force us out of the house, toward the point where my mother's letting up the windows at night. And mind you, we're in a neighborhood that's like a high crime area, shootouts happening all the time. So letting those windows up, it's likely that somebody's going to try to break in the house, but she's just letting the windows up, ultimately hoping that it cools us down long enough to where she can let it back down before any trouble comes by. And fast forward a few days, one of my siblings breaks something in the house and we get kicked out. So we find ourselves homeless again, and we don't know where we're going to stay this night. So fast forward throughout the day, it's like 8 p.m, we hadn't eaten. And by this time on most days, worst case scenario, we all would have had like a loaf of bread or something. And my baby sister starts crying. And my mother just gathers everybody up, brings us together, tries to calm us down, tells us that everything's going to be okay. And she just starts walking us around. And mind you, at this time, we're not really around any restaurants, any stores. And we're homeless, so we know that we need some hot food. And we start walking for probably, it lasted like an hour or so. Then we come up on a McDonald's. My mother walks us inside, orders a cheeseburger. Me and my siblings are looking around like, hold on, what's going on? And we don't know she only has a dollar to her name at the time. So she orders a cheeseburger, and the total comes out to $1.05. And realizing that she doesn't have the nickel, she asks the cashier if it's okay for her to get the cheeseburger without the nickel. And the cashier says no. So we watched my mom have to go around McDonald's and ask somebody to loan her a nickel. And everybody's watching us. And this went on for a little bit. And after a while, somebody was generous enough to give her the nickel. We're embarrassed at this point. She gets the cheeseburger, walks us outside. And then she starts slicing the burger up into 5 pieces. Mind you, there's 6 of us. But we're hungry. We're not thinking of it. As kids, we just start eating immediately. And as we're eating, my older sister notices that my mom isn't eating. And she asks her why. So the rest of me and my siblings that were eating, we stop and we offer our mom a piece of our individual slices. And she bursts into tears and is like, no, y'all keep eating. Turns it down, tells us to keep eating. And this moment, it stuck with me my whole entire life because we struggled, but we never saw our mom sweat during any of those moments through everything. But that moment kind of made you realize, like, this is rough. And ultimately for me, that lit a fire in me. It's like, man, I know a lot of people in our area are struggling like this, but this cannot be the story for my family. This has to change at some point. And if I have the power to do it, I'm going to do it. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to find a way. So that was kind of my, you know, my childhood. Ultimately, you know, you fast forward later, my dad gets out of prison.
Hey, Freddie, I'm sorry. 1 second, bro. I don't want to stop you real quick. How old were you at that point, man?
I was around maybe like, I say like 3 or 4 years old.
Shit.
Yeah, and I'm at the point, certain moments from that era, you don't really remember, but moments like that, they just stick with you, never forget it. Like, it's crazy because I remember that moment, but I don't even remember where we slept that night. But I remember my mom crying.
That's a core memory, man. That's a core memory right there. Even though it wasn't, you know, a happy core memory, you know, the one woman that had y'all's back was your mom, and you saw her pain, you know, and it just stuck with you. It's, you know, there's no mistake of why you've become successful, right? I don't want to derail the conversation too much. I just wanted to know how old you were because to me that was just for some reason important for the audience to have context and just understand, you know, they may have 3 or 4 year olds and now this story hits them a little differently, right? Yeah. So it might get them to feel a little more grateful for where they're at in their life, right? And what they're able to provide for their kids. So anyway, I digress. My apologies. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I'm like 3 or 4 at the time. And then later on, you fast forward, my father gets out of prison and we get some help when he gets out for a while. It's kind of hard for him to get a job, you know, as a felon. And we get some help financially, moves us to a better area. And they put me in the sports. And the sports thing was, you know, ultimately, you know, them giving me a football and believing in me. And then once I find out that I'm good, it's like, I want to make them proud. But ultimately, I'm thinking back to that cheeseburger moment. It's like, man, they take me to this area where I'm the only kid. Like, I'm the only kid from the inner city in the area. We moved to, like, a upper middle class area and we get some help. Because my father, his biggest thing when he got out of prison was, if I truly want to change my life, I can't be surrounded by the things that got me here. So he wanted to get away from that type of lifestyle, and we needed help to do it. So some people were willing to help us out early on when we didn't have the financial situation, you know, backing to do it. And that's ultimately how it played out. But yeah, you find I'm the only kid from the inner city. All these people that are kind of, you know, like well off, and we're like the struggling family in the Pop Warner League, the family that can't necessarily afford to play there. But then they find out this kid's gifted. They're like, listen, you don't have to pay. this is our guy. You don't have to pay. You don't have to pay at all. And everything ran through me on the football team. And once I found out that I was good, like they even put in a 2-touchdown rule for me. Like he can't touch the football after 2 touchdowns. Like I couldn't even snap the ball and hand it off to somebody else. I just had to stand around. But once I found out I was good, it's like, man, I'm going to use this to change my family's circumstances. My mother would never have to deal with a situation like this. Nobody in my family will ever have to deal with a situation like this. And that's what football became for me. It became that source, that tool that I could use to change my family's life.
That's beautiful, man. That's beautiful. You know, I caught something in there that I want to bring up. You know, it's crazy to me, and this may be an odd question for you, but I see it a lot, right? I see it in baseball, you know, at the Little League level, et cetera, and just all around even travel ball organizations. And it's like, why is it the kid that is a stud, you know, that gets that financial help, right? It's almost like they use it as the key determinant sometimes to be like, oh, this kid's a dude, man. You ain't got to pay. But if you had 2 left feet, would they give you the same opportunity? And so it just kind of begs the question of like how early the identity and the judgment of the youth based on how good they are at sports really starts.
It's the reality of the world we live in is people use you for what they can get. So that's the bottom line, the tough bottom line of this world. And I have a real conversation. You know, I'm a Pop Warner coach now. So having those real conversations with kids now and getting them prepared for the world that they live in, like this world isn't always fair. And you won't always get what you deserve. And just having them, you know, prepare for that reality, I think when it happens and it comes to them, it makes it easier for them to adjust. And I see things now that, you know, I'm able to, you know, keep it professional with, like, you know, these people don't care about you, but keep it business, because ultimately at the end of the day, there's a bigger purpose at play than me. I'm fighting for people that, you know, underdogs that don't get opportunities, that are ready to throw in the towel. So if I allow this moment to become bigger than what it needs to be, then I let those people down. So that's ultimately the mindset that I keep. But I understand, you know, what's at play. People use you for what they can get, and that's just life.
Word, word. No, I feel that, man, and I'm with you. It's just, it's an interesting thing, right? It's like you would hope it wouldn't be like that, but unfortunately it is. And, you know, on my show, I talk about adversity and I talk about mindset, right? And how those two things shaped you as an individual. I mean, hell, man, you won a national championship, you know, in college. That is amazing. And then you got to play in the NFL and you're doing some amazing things now, you know, but like, dude, like, walk me through your mom's mindset, because I know you were young, but your mom had this mental strength, you know, and some people can look at it and say, oh, well, she passed on a cheeseburger, you know, and let her kids eat it. Big deal. That's her job. No, it's not really, man. She's got to survive and sustain herself too. So what was it about your mom, dude, that just made her so strong mentally to guide you guys through some really tough times, you know, a father facing a double sentence, that's not easy. That is not easy at all.
Yeah, my mother, people ask me about, you know, ultimately the mindset and how I was able to, you know, get to where I was, and just really modeling myself a lot after her. And when you talk about a straight dog and go get her, like, she's not going to let anything break her. That's her. That's why the moment with the cheeseburger was so impactful, because you never see that from her. She never allows anything to break her. She continues to push, and then that moment got to her, so it stuck with me. But ultimately, just the model that she set for me, just life's going to happen. You're gonna run into roadblocks. Adversity's going to happen, but how can you respond? And she has this saying that I put on all the back of my hoodies, and basically it's when you have overcome every obstacle that was sent for your demise, that is success. And just that's how she lives her life. Like, these obstacles, they're just tests. Like, and I have a saying, struggle made, like, that's my Instagram platform, but just that's her, my mother. Like, she's lived her life by that motto, and I've just tried to follow it the best way I can, you know. And even, you know, people, they're looking at me now and they're motivated, but I couldn't, you know, I'm not half of, you know, as strong as what my mother is, you know, and just trying to model myself after her.
You know, it's one of the things I really respect about you, man, because I pay a lot of attention to what you got going on too, man. And for those of you listening, you know, I believe your handle is strugglemade105. Is that what it is? Something like that? Yeah. So at strugglemade105, it'll be in the show notes, but I want you guys to go connect with him on his platform, because you're going to see everything that he does for the youth. Dude, it's amazing to me, man. It's amazing to me. I can see the connection that you have with these adolescent student athletes. It's everything. It's everything. And it's crazy, because when I coach kids, it reminds me a lot of kind of how I approach things from a real life standpoint. It's not about the game. It's not about the decisions in the game. It's not about necessarily why your demeanor within the game matters, but it matters out there in life beyond the gridiron and beyond the gates of the baseball field. And so I always try to correlate everything when I'm coaching on the field and then mentally with my athletes is like, dude, this is about so much more. This is about so much more. This is about everything you're going to face, and how you respond now is going to create that neuroplasticity in your brain that is going to solidify how you respond in the future. And I just think it's so important, you know, for kids to understand it. Like, even an 11-year-old throwing his hands up when a coach, what am I doing wrong? Like, listen, that's how it starts. That's how it starts. And then what we have to do is we have to take control of that and teach them the right way to be on that field and how to respond to pressure and adversity, because they're going to face it their whole life. Every single day I'm faced with something, brother. Like, I mean, I'm sure you are too, Freddie. It's like the moment I feel like I'm getting to one threshold, I'm busting through that wall. I'm like, okay. And then a bigger wall is there. And I'm like, holy shit, I didn't even think about that wall. I better start thinking ahead a little bit, right? Like, our job is to coach the youth to overcome adversity with their minds.
Without a doubt. I'm with you. Yeah, and that's ultimately something that, you know, I try to do. And one of the things I went into 2024 with this motto, nothing gets left on the table. So any way that I can, you know, make an impact and utilize my gifts to the fullest, because I believe as human beings, sometimes we get complacent. It's human nature. You get complacent and, you know, things are going well and you're like, oh, chill, and, you know, take a break and enjoy things. But ultimately, when I leave this earth, I want to leave everything here. Like, I utilize every single gift. And then God's like, job well done. You mm-hmm. utilize every single thing that I've given you. And that's ultimately the mindset that I'm going into it with. And I think sometimes, you know, like it may be, you know, the job opportunity or maybe somebody in sports that was trying to make a team and they get to the point where they're about to make cuts and you're asking yourself, did I do enough? And I truly believe that if you have to ask yourself that, then you didn't. You mm-hmm. didn't do what you needed to do, because ultimately if you did, there wouldn't be any doubt in your mind. And even if they screw you over, you can live with yourself because you know you gave everything that you had. And that's how I live my life. Like, I give every single thing that I have in everything. And if things don't go my way, cool, it wasn't meant to be. Mm-hmm. And if they do, it's like, all right, let's rock out. But ultimately, if I do the best that I possibly can do, I won regardless. Because if it doesn't work out, it's like, all right, I can adjust and, you know, just going forward so that next time things may work out in my favor, or maybe it's something else that's meant for me and I learned that throughout the process. So that's one thing that I go into 2024 with. And that mindset is, my fiance, even her, is like, man, listen, she hates me, but it's a good in a good way. And man, because she's not really the gym rat that I am, but I'm telling her, like, you don't understand how much all of this stuff translates. Being mm-hmm. physically sharp, it impacts your mental, spiritual, all of these things, they tie in together. And I want to be the best version of me. Like, if I'm not on point physically and I go in front of a group and I'm speaking, they're like, man, this guy's telling us about discipline and he's 300 pounds overweight. Like, they're not going to listen to me. And that's just in everything. You gotta be sharp, because all it's gonna do is continue to make you better as a human being. And people see that. Like, now people see me on my gym grind, and I got people that have been eating bad their whole entire lives. Like, to where, you know, it's a family thing. You have people dying from diabetes, heart disease, all of these things. And they're like, man, I want to change. I want to make that change for my family because they see you doing it. And it matters. So I want to be that example, that light for people in all aspects. Like, I can't, like I said, nothing gets left on the table. I got to be sharp in every area.
I love that, dude. Nothing left on the table. You know what I named 2024, right? For me, it was the takeover. The takeover, right? Because that's the same thing, right? It's like, I'm going to take over because I've been preparing. I've been working. I've been doing all of this. And I don't have any question in my mind whether or not I've done enough. Not in this. I'm sure there's areas in my life where I go, wait a second, am I giving everything? You know, like I thought that today with my nutrition. I woke up this morning, random thought, bro. Freddie, 5 o'clock in the morning, random thought. Am I doing the best I possibly can on my nutrition? The answer was no. I said, okay, cool. What can I do? Well, you can sit there and you can meal prep. Weird thing about me, dude, I do not like my own leftovers. Like, I won't, it's weird, dude. I just have this mental block with it. I'm like, okay, cool. If that's not going to work with me, then what is going to work? Because you need to find the solution. So that way, when you're out late for baseball or whatever, and you come home and you haven't hit your protein or your calories, and you're like, you know, 30 grams, you know, low on your protein, about 450, you know, calories away from hitting your goal for the day, man, you got to have a meal in the fridge. So I bought 20 meals. They're being delivered on Tuesday, right? So, like, you know, then I know that, like, okay, great. I'm going to do that for 6 weeks and I'm going to evaluate where am I, right? Because a lot of people forget about decision fatigue, right? If you're always thinking, what am I going to eat? What am I going to eat? Where am I going to go? What am I going to cook? Well, at 9 o'clock at night when you're hungry, you're reaching for those cookies because you already have that decision fatigue. So kind of ties into a point where, hey, You know, I want people to understand when they're listening, I'm just not going on a rant about some random nutrition meal. It's like, there's checkpoints in your lives every day, y'all that are listening. Pay attention to this. There's checkpoints every single day that you ask yourself, am I doing enough? And if you're not, that's okay. It's not a time for guilt and shame. It is not. It is, leave that hustle culture out the door. You know, lock the door. Don't let it in. The shame and guilt don't have any place in your success. But just make a move, right? Do something there. It's like, okay, like the people in Freddie's community are seeing him on his grind. And let me tell you, dude, that gym grind is big for you, man, because you ain't making it look pretty, bro, right? And that's what makes it so great. You're in an older gym, real iron, and you're going, not worried about the aesthetic, but you know what? You're inspiring people, right? You're inspiring people to say, hey, am I doing enough? Am I even trying? And that's what I hate the word influencer, but that's what a real leader that influences people does. They live their lives, they document it, and then people start following. And I think that's where you're at. I know that's where you're at, and I love seeing it, man.
Yeah, and I never try to paint the picture that I love going to the gym. And it's like, no, I love to chill every single day, drink a soda, eat some Five Guys, whatever the case may be. And most days that I go to the gym, I don't want to go. But ultimately, that's when I find out the most about myself, those days that I don't feel like going, I'm not motivated, and I got to grind through a leg day or a heavy leg day or a heavy back day or cardio, hate cardio. But, you know, now I'm to the point where we're turning things up and I got longer sessions of cardio. And just those days, that's when I really have to gut it through. And these workouts I'm going into now, man, like 3 or 4 times throughout the workout, I'm trying to get myself to stop, convincing myself that's enough, go home. But it's like, nope, still got more on that sheet you didn't check off. So it's not easy at all. But nothing in life worth having is easy. If I'm truly trying to become the person that I told myself that I want to become, I can't cut any corners. Because you cut those corners and you don't get the results that you want to get every single year, eventually you got to change something up. You can't blame anybody else. You can't look to your left or your right. It's that person in the mirror. You got to hold them accountable. So, yeah, we're not cutting any corners. We're not leaving anything on the table. I'm going to find out 2024. I'm going to find out who I am.
That's what's up, man. That's what's up. I love that, man. I love that. It's all about accountability, right? And keep your word to yourself. And like you said, most of the days that you're at the gym, you don't want to be there. You know, I'll admit, you know, there's days where I'm there at 4:30 in the morning, and there's days, I mean, I'm a full-time entrepreneur. I have my own schedule now. There's times yesterday I was there at 11 o'clock in the morning. Like, I'm going to go when I want, right? The reality is though, I would say about out of the four to five days I'm in the gym, I only want to be there one time. And that's typically Monday. You know, every other day I'm like super tired because I've had the whole work week. You know, I'm tired mentally. And when I wake up in the morning, I'm exhausted because I didn't go to bed until 11, you know, because I had a baseball game or I had something, right? And to your point, and for the audience's sake, is like, it's okay to feel that way. No one's going to judge you for saying like, I really don't want to be here right now. If someone came up to me in the gym and said, yo, bro, man, I do not want to be here right now. I'm like almost in tears because I'm just so uncomfortable and I don't want to be here. I would have so much respect for that person, right? Because they're open with their feelings and saying like, hey, this is not where I want to be, but they're there doing the work anyway, right? And I think that's super important because that's how we gain that confidence in ourselves and we create that trust, right? In order to say, okay, nothing left on the table in 2024. I'm going to find out who I really am and what I have to give to this world and to myself. And dude, you're going to inspire massive amounts of people doing it, including your beautiful fiance, which by the way, she does all your shirts, right? She does
your apparel. She's been doing it for a while. Like I was going through I went through trial and error and everything, so many different situations where I would go through people and start relying on them, especially once I started getting, because I released the clothing line. That was the first thing I released before anything. So that was kind of the breadwinner. And then I released the book and that started, you know, doing what it did. So I kind of neglected it a little bit. So I started leaning on other people to get everything done for me. And it was always situations where people would kind of let me down. She's like, nope, I'll take it over. You're trusting people that you can't count on. I'll take that over. So she takes pride in it. Like, she has a cup business that took off during the pandemic. And so, like, the creations thing is something that she loves and she's passionate about. So it worked out perfect.
You know, it's funny when you always leave it in somebody else's hands. This is something that I've experienced in the last 4 years. Like, dude, you're let down. You know, certain things we need to handle ourselves, right? Because we know it's going to get done. But let's go back to, man, we've already been on here half an hour almost, dude. This is like flying by in like quick style, dude. This is a great conversation, y'all. I hope you're enjoying it as much as we are. Let's get into, you know, your time at Florida State and then going into the NFL and just talking, you know, walk people through that journey. Did it look like what you wanted it to? Was there adversity there? What did it mean to you and your family? All that kind of good stuff.
Yeah, Florida State, it was full of up and downs. Everybody, you know, the national championship year for me, because ultimately the national championship year, I'm playing fullback. For those of you that don't know, I came out of high school as one of the top linebackers in the country, recruited by everybody. But my junior year, I had an injury that doctors told me at the time was career ending. I break my fibula, break my ankle, lose all the cartilage in my ankle, and I break a few bones in my foot. And I was the first person, people don't notice, but I was the first person in the state of Florida that had to have the cartilage, like, injection surgery. They injected some gel in my foot to try to recirculate the cartilage in my ankle. I was the first person, I was a test dummy for that. And that was like 2012. So yeah, that was a crazy process, but it's crazy now to see the people that had the same injury that I had, and they bounce back so fast because they have, you know, the research and not, of course they have, mine was high school. There, a lot of people obviously have now, they're, you know, in organizations that have, you know, the resources to kind of get them back faster, versus the doctors are telling me, like, your only worry is being able to walk. You're not going to play again. So, yes, I still struggle with that leg now. So fast forward to Florida State, I come in and they give me an opportunity to start as a freshman at linebacker. I come in the spring and I kind of shock everybody. And so I come in the summer, they're like, man, you got to put on some weight. And that pride kind of kicks in. You're like, man, I want to be, you know, one of the first freshmen in a long time to start at linebacker. Kept hearing that from people in the hometown, like, there hasn't been a freshman linebacker that came in and started at Florida State in a while. So that pride kind of kicked in. I'm a guy that at the time, I'm like 210, and my game was built off speed. So I literally, in the summer, I go from 210 to like 235-ish, 237. That's a lot of weight fast.
Yeah, bro. And
that, mind you, I'm still dealing with the leg issue. It wasn't an issue when my weight was lower, but as soon as I put on that weight, I could not move anymore, not that first year. So I'm seeing plays, I'm diagnosing everything, and I can't get there. And I remember the staff, they're bringing me in. They're like, yo, what's going on? Is something going on at home? Like, this isn't the same player we saw in the spring. And I'm like, nah. Like, and I'm here. Yeah. They're like, this isn't the same guy we saw, man. Like, what's going on? Yeah. Then Jimbo brings me in the office, and he's like, man, listen. Because I had offers on both sides of the ball. I had schools offer me at running back and linebacker. Jimbo's like, man, listen, you're probably going to redshirt this year. And at linebacker, he's like, but I want to give you a look at fullback. And I go over there, and, man, I think I practice with them for about 2 weeks, and then we have our first game against Nevada. Then I break for like a 25-yard run, and then I score a touchdown in the first game. And I was like, man, they're not letting me go back to linebacker, man. It's not happening. But, yeah, it was a lot of up and downs. I was battling with that because fullback, you know, it wasn't a sexy position. I'm like, man, and ultimately, I was thinking selfish at that time. It was like, my mother, I remember that cheeseburger situation. I'm trying to get to the NFL. And fullbacks aren't really in the NFL anymore. So if I'm playing this position, how am I going to make sure my family's straight? So I battled with that the whole entire year. But, you know, it was still a blessing, like, just going through that process, being around elite level of athletes every single day. Like, we talked about it, not, you know, people think when you're playing at a high level like that, everybody just comes in motivated. No, it's not the case. 90% of the time, guys don't want to practice. They hate it.
Hell no, man.
We had our best practices. It's weird.
Yeah, bro.
Guys go in complaining like, coach, give us a day off. Like, we've been grinding. Give us a day off. And he's like, no, we got to stay on it. And guys are mad. They're going to practice pissed. But we end up having one of our best practices we had all year. So it's just those things. You don't know, you're not going to always be motivated to do it. But the discipline, the consistency, like your discipline and your consistency has to kick in when your motivation runs out. And you got to understand the goal that you set for yourself, because you're not going to always feel like it. Things are going to happen. You're going to always have obligations, but ultimately the job has to still be complete. So being there at Florida State and being around these highly successful individuals, Jimbo Fisher, your Jalen Ramsey, your Dalvin Cooks, Jameis Winston, all those guys, you only, like iron sharpens iron. You're around these guys, you don't get better, and you're doing something wrong. So just being around them, it helped me. And, you know, going from my freshman year being the guy that is complaining about playing fullback and then I fall in love with it and I become a number one player at my position coming up. So end up, fast forward, go to the Senior Bowl, NFL Combine, and I signed with the Bears in 2017. So that was kind of my college and NFL career. Then in the NFL, that's kind of why my first stint with politics at that level. Mm-hmm. And I'm not the type of person, like you hear a lot of people complain about how politics weren't on their side. I'm not the type of person that's going to complain about how the politics screwed me over, because I'm a firm believer that if you execute at a high level, you can overcome any odds, anything that, you know, that's that anybody that doesn't want you to win. And I was in a situation where ultimately a few of the guys that were the biggest decision makers, as far as I go, offensive coordinator and the running backs coach, they didn't want me there. So that was kind of my weird thing, dealing with an agent that kind of screwed me over. I had a situation where another team was trying to triple what the Bears offered me, but he has another client that plays a similar position to me on another team, so he doesn't want two clients competing for a spot. Mm-hmm. And I'm going into this thing blind and naive, but later after my career I kind of realized everything. But so with the Bears, ultimately I get into a situation where at the time we have Jordan Howard, Benny Cunningham, and Jeremy Langford. They're playing running back. Of course, I'm the fullback. But these guys go down in training camp. The Bears bring in another fullback to kind of compete with me. And he's the OC and the running backs coach. They coached him 2 years prior in Detroit, I believe. So this is their guy. Like, they're going on dinner. They're going out to dinner, all this. They got a personal relationship. And they say from day one, we have a team meeting. They're like, oh, he's going to make us better. I knew I couldn't make a mistake. He wasn't going to beat me out physically. I'm more gifted than him. He wasn't going to outwork me. It wasn't going to happen. But this is their guy. You can't give them a reason. Ultimately, they're just looking for one reason to get rid of you. Mm-hmm. So fast forward, Jordan Howard, all our running backs go down, and I'm playing fullback. John Fox comes in. He's like, we're not going to sign any running backs. We got Freddie. He can play fullback and running back. Freddie, I hope you're ready. I hope you're in shape, because you're going to get double duty. So I'm playing both, and I'm like, man, this is what I'm looking forward to. This, I've been waiting for this opportunity my whole career to showcase all the things that I can do. It's kind of hard in college because you got Dalvin Cook, and you're not taking carries away from that guy. Like, that's just being realistic. Yeah. Yeah. So I remember being in situations where we go into the preseason games with a game plan, and the running back coach is putting me in for pass protection plays and taking me out whenever it's time to run the ball, because he doesn't want me to get any film and beat this guy out. Like, for those of you that don't understand, the practice, beating the guy out in practice is one thing, but the games holds hold a whole different level of weight. Mm-hmm. So he was trying to make sure that I didn't get the film to beat this guy out. So fast forward to the second to last preseason game, we're playing the Titans. They give me a carry, and it's a fullback dive. I reach out, get hit, knee hits the ground. I reach out, and then the guy pokes the ball out. I know I'm down, but they call it a fumble on the field. And I remember running to the sideline, and the coach is like, the running back's coach, he's like, man, you were clearly down, but we'll see what they say on the review. On the review, the bodies are kind of covering it up. Like, on the field, I'm thinking, like, I'm down, just go ahead and review it. But the bodies were covering it up. I was like, man, they're going to stick with the call they made on the field. Yeah. But at that time, I was like, man, that's that one reason they were looking for. this is the second to last preseason game, but I knew that was the reason they were looking for. And I'm like, shoot, I'll still end up somewhere else after. So we finished the preseason. They let me go. And I remember meeting with other teams, and now this narrative comes out that, oh, why didn't Freddie beat this guy out? And now it's circulating that I'm a bad character guy, which is weird for me because coming out of college, the biggest check mark next to my name was my character.
Yeah.
Everybody, team captain, high character guy, everybody loves him. They used to always make jokes. Like, man, are you paying everybody off? You're the only player we found in this draft that has no red flags. And so for this, to see this coming out, I kind of knew it was somebody within the organization trying to paint this narrative, but it was outside of my control. All I could do was, you know, kind of move forward. But I remember, I think, a workout that I had with a team, and I came in at 245. And mind you, this is the weight I played at my whole entire career. But they started to believe the narrative that was painted about me before I even come into the door. So they tell my agents, like, yeah, he came in overweight. He was 245. At the combine, he was 235. I'm like, everybody drops weight for the combine, but I played at 245 since college. But it was like, man, listen, this narrative, they're sticking with it. They're believing it, but I can't control it. So ultimately, I bounce around and I never get on the team. Then I go to a developmental league, the AAF, Alliance of American Football. And this is the league where the guys doing the fraud. The developmental league to get guys back into the NFL, that league folds. And at this point, it's like, man, I don't think the NFL is meant for me. Because for most people, the situation for them is they're just not good enough. But that's not my story. So I believe that God is trying to direct me to do something else. And it's weird because I'm so young at the time. But I don't know, I was just paying attention to everything. It's like, man, listen, it's not like I'm putting out bad film, and it's not like I'm not dominating. I've been dominant since I played this game. I've always been dominant. If I couldn't play it anymore, I would have laid it down a long time ago. But that's not the situation. So maybe God's trying to lead me somewhere else. So I transition, and then I write my book. It's like, man, there's some guys, because the transition for me was, it was tough. So I wanted to help out. Initially, I wanted to help out athletes that struggle with that transition after the game. And the book just took off. And you get to 2021 and the pandemic hits. Now you have people from all over the world that don't even follow sports that are reading my book. Like, my book ends up in China, Japan, Germany, Ireland, all these crazy places. But it started from a place of me just wanting to help people out. Mm-hmm. I wasn't worried about being a best-selling author at all. I didn't know what was for me, but I wanted to help out a few athletes. But people are, the pandemic, they're losing their jobs. And I remember a guy reaching out to me at this point, and he messaged me on Twitter. He's like, man, you don't know me. But I came across your book on Amazon, and the name just caught my attention. I don't follow sports. I lost my job. He said he lost his job. His wife left him, and he was about to take his life, but he started reading my book. He said, I haven't been able to stop. I just finished the book, and your book kept me from taking my life, and I just want to thank you. He's like, keep telling your story. Do not stop telling your story. He's like, you really changed my life. And I didn't realize, like, at the time, I didn't realize, you know, even though I knew I had been through a lot, I didn't realize, you know, there are a lot of people in the world that were, you know, fighting these similar battles, and they need some type of inspiration. So from there, it's like, man, let's take this thing up a notch. Mm-hmm. Let's continue telling this story, but let's try to tell it on an even bigger level. So once the book became a bestseller, you know, I started reaching out to some of the people that I knew in the industry, in the film industry. And, you know, none of them really wanted to give me an opportunity. And then my story goes viral on Facebook. I had an interview with somebody, and the cheeseburger story goes viral. Next thing you know, you got all these different film producers reaching out to me wanting to work together. Mm-hmm. So it's like, all right, okay. So a guy from Netflix wants to work together, but I didn't really have the opportunity to, you know, tell my story the way I wanted to, and I didn't really have any power in that situation. So I was like, I don't know if this makes sense. Then some guys that had worked with Warner Brothers that were trying to branch out and do their own thing. They reached out, and we ultimately got a deal done. So at the end of 2021, I signed a deal with them. We started filming in 2022. We released the film at the end of 2022 in October. And mind you, this is all independent. I have so many different people like, mind you, independently putting all your money up. So putting all your money up, released the film in October. I don't really know about the film festivals or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Everybody's like, man, if you don't enter the film festivals, it won't get picked up. And I'm like, okay, you know, shoot. I'm not really thinking about that at this point. It's like, this is a blessing even if it ends here. Mm-hmm. So less than 3 months after releasing the film, we get a message from a guy from Gravitas Ventures, one of the biggest independent film distribution companies in the world. They reach out. So a guy that I had connected with months prior, he had a relationship with them and he had followed the story and he had been sending them all of my work and he showed them the documentary. And they had, he's like, man, they have a film deal on the table. And I don't know if you're interested, but they did his film a few years prior. He kind of told me what his film made on working with them. I was like, man, let's do it. So at the beginning of 2023, we signed a deal with them and the film released everywhere worldwide in May of 2023. So on Prime Video, Apple TV, it was called Trials of Triumph, the documentary. And this is after people telling me that it wouldn't get picked up because it wasn't in film festivals. And mind you, this is my first ever film I'm working on. I don't really know how a film should be formatted. Anything is just I'm just thinking about what I want people to hear. Because ultimately, the documentary at first was just going to be me telling my story. It was going to be short, probably like a 30-minute, you know, short film. But I was like, man, nah, I don't want to just tell my story. I want to bring in other people telling their trials and triumphs stories so that no matter who watches this film, they'll find somebody that they feel like they can relate to, because life's real. Everybody's not going to relate to a national champion or NFL player, but they can relate to your everyday person that's still trying to fight and grind their way through, or your person that was at the top and they lost it all. Like, those type of stories need to be heard. Like, you know, celebrities are cool, but you got everyday people that are superheroes to me. And I wanted to bring in people from all different walks of life for this and ultimately make an impact. So that's, you know, that's the message that we tried to get across with it. And we did that. So we'll see where things go from here. I know it's just the beginning.
That's amazing. And I want to, you know, land the plane here, but I want the audience to take away something really, really big from here. And it is within the last 5 to 10 minutes of what you were saying. I mean, they could take a bunch of things, but I want them really to dive in on this. It does not matter what other people say or feel about what you're doing. As long as you can believe in it and you truly believe it at the heart, at the core of you, and you're giving it everything you got, you have to understand that God has a bigger plan. And if he's for it, there's nothing anybody can do to stop it. So you stay the course. And it's funny, I'm going through something similar right now, you know, and I'm listening to you and I'm just completely mind blown and my wheels are turning because I'm going through this massive growth opportunity and there's just a lot of things kind of fluid with it right now. And I got one group saying this, I got another group saying that, that's not going to work. This will work. That won't work. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, right? What's going to happen? And then I have my wife, who's my business partner. She's more of a silent partner, right? You don't see her, you know, she's not like the image of the brand or anything, but she's my confidant. You know, this is like, hey, babe, this is what's going on. Like, where are we at? And she goes, yeah, none of this matters. I'm like, it absolutely flipping matters. And she goes, no, that's not what I'm saying. She goes, I already know the ability you have. You're already gifted. We know that. And if this is what God wants, he's going to step in at some point, but you got to allow him. And she goes, I'm just going to let you know, if I have any apprehensions about anything, we're not doing it. And then I pipe up, I'm like, what do you mean? You just can't jump in now. Like, I'm in this every day. She goes, no, I can and I will. I can and I will, because I see things differently. I'm seeing them objectively. You're in it, right? You're in it. But, you know, I guess what I'm saying to you, Freddie, and to everybody who's listening, it's just, it's not for us to figure out. It's not for us to figure out. You know, there's certain templates and there's certain, you know, processes that you usually go through, like with films, go to the festivals, but it's not the end all be all. Clearly it's not, right? So what we have to do is we have to trust in what we're doing, trust that God is taking care of us and putting us in the right situations, and we're executing, you know, through our goodwill and our free will. And if it's meant to be, it's going to be, you know, and if not, hey man, you gave it hell, right? Like, mm-hmm. and that too, like right there, that is hard for people, right? That's hard for competitors like you and I. Like I thought when I baseball was over, I was like, how could he take that? Like, honestly, I questioned him. Like, how could you take baseball away from me? It's the only thing I know how to do. It's the only thing I'll ever be good at. And now I'm sitting here,
mm-hmm.
right? And my experiences have led me down a road to help athletes. And dude, I have 3 Division I athletes right now that are putting on their cleats for opening day, that are my clients that I've helped over the last 5-6 months. And I'm just like this ball of energy, excited for them. I got one at Mizzou, got one at ETSU, one at FGCU, and they're all in the starting lineups, and they get to kick off their season, you know? And, you know, I get to see this transpire. Had I become the athlete that I wanted, I might never be in this position I'm in now. And I love to see others win. And even if it means I didn't win like I wanted to back then, well, I can relish another success now. And that's what I'm about. So, man, I just want to thank you. You've provided a ton of value to the audience, and I really hope they go back and listen to this again. So if you're listening, go back and listen to it again, because there's so many lessons, guys. There's so many lessons in Freddie's story about determination, grit, faith, just motivation and discipline, adversity, and overcoming all the obstacles and all the adversity. That this is not a one listen episode. Go back and listen to it again, guys. And I just, again, brother, thank you so much for coming on. I'm so grateful and blessed that we got to finally do the episode. And I know it's going to impact a ton of people. So just,
I want to, before we leave, say one more thing to the audience that they can take with them.
Come on.
You know, just, you know, ultimately not, you know, believing the limitations that people place on you. If I would have told you that a kid that comes from the inner city that's been homeless made it to the NFL, after all the obstacles that he had to go through, you'd be like, no way, no way at all. And in sports, we see these inspiring stories. Everybody has a sad story, but nobody cares until you win. So for me to be telling my story at this level, after not being a Heisman contender, not being one of the, you know, a Hall of Famer, career's long gone, didn't last long in the NFL, but people want to hear my story. Like, I just literally last week had an NFL Hall of Famer reach out to me, like, man, I want all your struggle made gear. And he wants me on the show. So, but that goes to show you, no matter where you're at in your life, you can win. And God is always moving, even when you can't see it. Like, some of these situations, like with the film, God is setting people up, lining them up, and they're mentioning your names in rooms to get you opportunities. Like, I'm not even trying to get my film out there at the point, because I don't, you know, I'm like, man, shoot, this was the big opportunity. But now you got people behind the scenes, they're like, man, I love this story. I wanted to be heard by more people, and they're mentioning it. And that's how God moves. You can't, when I thought football was all, like you said, with baseball, God's like, nah, I took away football because you would have never found your voice if I'd have kept you on that field. So yeah. I had to take away some things and build your character a little bit. So now you can go share your story and utilize those experiences to impact the world. Same thing with you and what you're doing now. And there's somebody right now that's struggling with that transition. It's like, man, God's already prepared the way. You just got to go trust the process.
Absolutely, brother. Well, dude, man, I hear you. And I believe in it 1,000%. And listen, y'all, I need you to go connect with my boy, Freddie. Everything's in the show notes. Go connect with him. See what he's all about and become involved with him any way you possibly can. I just, again, brother, thank you again for coming on. And y'all, until the next time, stay determined and go chase your dreams. Peace. Southwest Florida is one of the most beautiful places on the planet to live. For those of you that are thinking of moving from other states to come to Florida, or even just moving to a different part of the state, I want you to think of a big, beautiful, luxury home. Contact Legacy Luxury Builders. They are a family-owned and operated luxury residential construction company. As a family-owned business, they believe in the power of building not just homes, but legacies. Contact Legacy Luxury Builders. The nightmare of feeling like you'll never measure up, of constant second guessing and self-doubt. It eats away at you and destroys your confidence. I've been there too, feeling like I didn't belong on the field with my teammates, but it doesn't have to stay that way. I used to compare myself to everyone around me. I thought that no matter how hard I worked, I'd never be as good as the other guys. It killed my self-belief. I now help athletes develop an elite mindset so comparison no longer controls them. We teach techniques to cut out the negative self-talk and unlock your full potential. Imagine stepping into the box when it counts the most and feeling totally confident in your ability, feeling invincible instead of insecure, ready to seize the opportunity instead of shrinking from it. That's the mindset I help athletes develop. Don't waste another minute on comparison and self-doubt. Take control of your mindset and become the confident, unstoppable competitor you were meant to be. DM or comment below to get started with Edge and transform